Hello, I'm Helen Dalley. Welcome to Build It, They'll Come. Candid interviews with amazing Australian entrepreneurs who started with a humble idea and built it into something substantial and sustainable. It's the human face behind how they built it. On today's episode...
Our opportunity is limitless, and through sound execution, I think we could be one of Australia's greatest technology companies, but we must execute on that. And if I want to be part of that journey, I've got to keep evolving myself.
You've probably never heard of Grow Super or Grow Inc. And that's just the way co-founder and CEO Matthew Keeley likes it. But Grow Inc. is solving some cumbersome problems that clog up the back office administration of our massive superannuation funds. Grow Inc. created a more streamlined way for superannuation fund customers like you and I to better access and engage with our individual super information. Keeley and team built innovative admin software using blockchain or distributed ledger technology. Grow Inc. claims that it transforms legacy systems and business models and allows superfund managers to offer more efficient, real-time information to customers about their super. So how did a fifth-generation farm boy end up revolutionizing the way superannuation funds interact with clients and members? They say giving as easy an experience for members as Amazon gives its online shoppers. And just how do the Batuta Advocate guys play into this story? And how the heck did Matt Keeley persuade one of the world's largest wealth managers, the giant US Vanguard, with something like $10 trillion under management, to take a punt on his superfund back office platform, Grow Inc.? Well, you're about to find out, and it's a masterclass in how an Australian minnow can become a globally excellent company, having just completed a $50 million funding round in early 2024. Here's Matthew Keeley's brilliant journey with Grow Inc.
Matt Keeley, co-founder and CEO of Grow Inc. Thank you so much for joining me on Build It, They'll Come.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what is Grow Inc., because it's a relatively new player in the fintech space. Started in, what, 2017, really?
Our journey started in 2017, and the problem we uncovered at the early stages actually led us to no longer being Grow Super and becoming Grow Inc. because of the problem we uncovered.
So should we start at Grow Super?
It's probably best, I think, for context, because I think without appreciating the fundamentals of the problem we identified, we would not have built the business we are today. And it was it's a key part of why we have been so successful since.
So how did it come about? What was Grow Super? How did you even get into a super fund?
We got into being Grow Super because we were basically a group of entrepreneurs, and we thought that when you looked at wealth management in general, and if you thought about most ordinary everyday Australians, they left school. And when they left school, they had no idea about their finances, but they actually went off and got a job or went to university. And after that, worked for 40 years. And after 40 years, went and saw a financial advisor and said, you know, how much money do I need to retire?
If you had at the end of the journey.
And it's like saying to a doctor at 60, you know, what could I do to be healthy? Well, if you went for a run 3 days a week, it had probably been a great outcome from 20 to 60. And so we thought that we could actually drive change for millions of Australians by building a cloud-based, code-free platform that allowed super funds and fund managers to reimagine how they provided digital experiences to their members or investors. So, for example, if you go to Netflix or if you go to Amazon, you get a personalized experience compared to myself. But with the way that the wealth management market operates now, that's impossible. And we thought we could build a platform that could enable funds to actually use that to configure and build different experiences.
Just really quickly, why is it impossible for super funds to give us all a personalized service? Are there just too many of us in the system?
It comes back to something that until you work in the industry, and we were pretty naive at the start, because we thought that they're big institutions who are paid a lot of money, and it's not actually the product manufacturers, the fund manager or the super fund, but the providers behind they have built technology or are using technology that was built before the internet. And so the challenge they were having is that APIs were not, were an afterthought. They're all on-prem. So there's no ability to provide real-time.
APIs, prem.
So basically, there is no ability for them to access those data points and think of it like plumbing. They can't access any of those pipes that actually sit there, and no one has the ability to feed that information into one pipe and then share it back to you. So you might be able to call information, but if you're an investor and you update your address, there's no ability for you to get a, you might press submit, change my address on a front end application. That could take 3 days before it's updated in the record. You call the call center and say, look, I made a mistake in my, or I'd like my mail still going to my wrong address. They wouldn't actually have seen that record because it might take 3 days for there to be reconciliation downstream. So the real problem is that you're not sharing data across that network in a trusted way. And that means that ultimately the experiences and value propositions funds can give to end investors to help them have a better life in retirement is actually almost impossible with the legacy of today.
Okay. So just back to where you fit into this story, you started Grow Super. Why did you even start a super fund? I mean, that's a big issue, isn't it?
With
all the regulation, the requirements.
Yeah.
Did you have to get APRA approval?
It was an interesting journey, and I still remember when we decided we wanted to do it. So my world before this, I cut my teeth in technology. I left there and became a certified.
What were you doing in technology?
Basically, for Department of Immigration, Australian Electoral Commission, I was working for a company who looked after all of their infrastructure. And I learnt
their digital infrastructure.
How they were going to actually, so when you vote, how does all that work?
Right.
I can't say I'm that proud of everything that sits there, but that is a world that I learned and cut my teeth in. So I got to see the benefit of change that you could drive at a mass scale, but you wouldn't get any of the recognition for that. So you would be the one who put in the infrastructure, you laid that road, but it's actually the other brand who would stand up and impact millions of Australians. I left there and went into financial advice. I became a certified financial planner. As part of that journey, it just really.
But just a minute, how did you get from either the Department of Immigration or the Electoral Commission to think about finance and become a financial advisor?
Well, I guess I was not even a kid who finished. I grew up on a small town in the middle of New South Wales, fifth generation farm. About 800 people. I went to. To school and at the
what,
end
the
of
the local
that,
high school or did,
I got
did
sent
you go
away,
to the city?
Was, no, I got sent away to school to go to boarding school. We all left and you roll through to the end of that. I certainly wasn't the most studious kid. I just didn't understand the purpose of certain things that we did. But if I wanted to apply myself to something, I could. So I didn't even get a university admission index. I had no aspiration to do anything like that. I tried to play professional sport for a few years. I'm only 5'6", so I didn't grow as tall as I was hoping and thinking that late growth spurt would come. But through that, I actually was working where I was working and I got a job coaching a team in Canberra. And it was at that one of my players said to me, look, your ability to help us understand the context about what we're doing in sport, I think would resonate really well with advising people on their wealth. And why don't you become a financial planner?
Really? Now, that's still a circuitous route, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you go back in time, financial advice had a pretty bad reputation back then. And I actually still remember the words to him. It was a cold winter's night in Canberra. And I said, I'd rather be a used car salesman because that was the reputation of the advice industry. And he said, look, take 2 weeks leave and come and work for me. So I took 2 weeks leave. I went and worked for him. And I thought, this is pretty amazing when you could actually sit inside. You would sit with a family. They had some complexities to solve. And by solving those complexities that required money planning or advice, you could change their life and they could sleep better and they could spend their money. Fast forward 10 years, I built my own business. I sold that in 2018. But the reason for selling it was because of Grow, because basically in that business, I had 38 clients, paid me very well. But I knew what I did, 80% of what they had, we could do for every Australian. But you would need technology to scale that. And so that led us to going, well, where's the best place to start? We'll start in superannuation. We'll build our own super fund. We'll test and learn there. We'll make sure we do a really good job by those members. We'll give them a solution that is light years ahead of anything that's out there. But rather than it be about Grow, we will then give that technology to the incumbents they can then share that with their millions of members and will drive positive change and no one will know we exist.
Right. So it was actually from the beginning, was it more about the technology and the digital transformation that you felt you could, that you envisaged and that you could make a reality than the super fund?
It was demonstrating that if you're going to walk in and tell somebody who looks after billions of dollars of assets that you know what you're talking about, then you need to have played in that space.
Yeah.
And we thought that it's a bit hard to tell someone that they could move from paper-based applications to a world where you're connecting real-time data that's seamlessly going through. Everybody gets a text message and an update in real time. We could identify if employers weren't paying their super on that behalf.
And was no one else doing this? Australian Super, all the biggies, do they not send texts?
It's come a long way since then. Mm. I think that what I would say is that wasn't in their DNA to be a technology-led business.
Yeah.
And that's pretty standard across, and that's why they partner with businesses like ourselves. But as a fund, it was just so amazing to sit in there and you're trying to set up a fund. So you could Google how to set up a super fund. You won't get any answers to how to do what we had to do. But it's not until you get in there that it's a pretty scary thing that you start to see. So you think that, well, we're going to be a front-end application and obviously we can rent and we can be a super fund and the regulator will do that. But if you move it through from there, there's an ecosystem of players who help you move a transaction of money each day. So if you
can just explain that a bit more? What's the ecosystem?
So if you can imagine that you buy an investment, you are
a super fund. I want to invest in, you know, give my hard-earned dollars to, say, Australian Super.
That's
we use them as an example because they're the biggest.
Yeah. So if you decided that you wanted to sign up to a super fund, you would come onto a website or application of some way, shape, or form. You would complete that and you would think that you've pressed submit that it's gone. What actually happens is it goes and sits in a database. That night, someone copies that database and shares that as an Excel spreadsheet or SFTP to the main incumbent who, another provider, who ultimately becomes the book of records of your world. They manually put that and ingest that into their world and you become, so that takes 24 hours. After that, they then send out the instructions. So there'll be different investment managers. So they'll get an instruction to say, your money has come in. Can you please invest? They will do that. It will spin for another day whilst they place that trade and bring it back. They all have, you can see now, different databases. There's a front-end database. There's the administration database. There's the custodian database. Then you've also got life cover, total permanent disability cover, and income protection cover potentially for your. There is no ability for that insurer to see any of your data, but they'll have their own registry as well.
So none of them really talk to each other in real time.
It all
has to have been done before you arrived, almost by hand, even though it is in a digital form.
Yes, they basically have SFTP files that get passed around the whole ecosystem.
Which means each step is ingesting those data files.
Yeah, and this is where there were catalysts for. So we were a super fund. We were trying to drive this change. We were trying to then sell our technology into incumbents. They loved what we had.
Right.
We then tried to put our application onto incumbent technology, and the way that would connect in was so old that it was impossible. Your ability to move forward was just not even going to get there. It would be like saying that, like trying to get. It's why, you know, if you wanted to build a petrol car versus an electric car, you have to go off and set up a new company to go away.
Meaning you couldn't marry your new digital real-time system onto the old legacy computer systems.
And it was so bad that this was our experience was so poor where we built most of their API infrastructure to try and help them move forward.
Right.
We were willing to do that because we knew what it would do. But two things occurred. And it's very interesting when you think about how the old world versus the new world. The first thing that happened was the incumbents, they actually made money off providing their own front-end application. So they sold to the super funds their own application. They weren't willing to, like a phone, you can say, I don't like Apple Calendar. I'll download my own calendar off the App Store. You had to use theirs. If you didn't use theirs, you had to spend an enormous amount of money connecting up the infrastructure to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The second problem was that as we were going through that, we had a scenario where each day they would send us back the updated records of what had happened yesterday that they'd put into their source of truth, their system of record. and someone pressed the wrong button, which you could assume is Control V, and put the same member number for 15,000 people across our fund. Of those, a whole bunch of them got an exit notice to say that you have left the fund, which wasn't the truth. And it led to a situation where we had incorrect unit pricing. We had members who were upset because it looked like their money had was no longer there. And it was basically the problems that we uncovered as a fund led us to going, the real problem is actually not the front end. These funds are all trying to give better experiences to their members. Yeah. They're so passionate about their members. It's one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see in any industry I've worked in, where the passion and how much they care about their members is and their investors is enormous. But they're so tied to what legacy technology can do. And so we said, well, the real problem is the back end. What would you do? We did an assessment of that, and it led us to building, then turning Grow Super off and building Grow Inc.
Okay, so Grow Super finished. When Correct. Was that, 2018?
Yeah, we officially exited the market in about 2020, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
And Grow Inc. became much more than that. So essentially, in a nutshell, what is Grow Inc.?
So Grow Inc. is ultimately the book of records for all of the superannuation funds and fund managers that sits out there. It's the, think of it like AWS for funds management. And
yeah, so it's their backroom administration.
Correct, yes.
That you do, provide through your platform.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. What's your mission with Grow Inc., Matt?
Our mission is that we think that we can impact 50 million people around the world and no one knows we exist. We think we can do that by partnering with like-minded institutions, and we think we can have the platform we have today, which actually allows entrepreneurs, developers, and incumbents to build solutions on top of our infrastructure. So what that means is that if you could imagine if what we have today existed back then, Grow Super could have actually demonstrated what an app store could look like and what that could mean. And if you think about this now, we're already seeing when Steve Jobs launched the iPhone in 2007, there was no app store. The first Apple iPhone did not have an app store, but it came after that. But Apple had to demonstrate that there was also a camera, a music player. You could then have a calendar. And once people's minds opened up to, wow, now we have millions and millions of businesses who've built themselves on top of that infrastructure. And they've driven change across the world in a way that no one company could have actually done. And so if you think about us, we think that we can transform the entire financial services market from a traditional finance of spreadsheets, essentially, to a digital economy. And we can do it for the benefit of the end investor. And we're so far having a great time doing that.
You utilize blockchain, so distributed ledger technology, yep, in your platform. Just for the benefit of listeners and viewers, just sort of how does your distributed ledger technology work for super funds?
So the way it works is this, is if I go back to my... You are an investor of a super fund. Behind that super fund, there are some key actors each day who have to rely on each other to share data. There's a super fund, there's an administrator, there is the insurer, there is a custodian, and there is a mail house, potentially a call center as well, at a very simple level. And the way we can enable it is that there is no sole source of truth. It is a shared source of truth. So each of those parties that I just said-
Source before, of truth, you mean the data-
Yeah, so often what happens in the world is that there's only one company who can be the sole source of truth, and that means that they have to reconcile that every time. And so everybody else is, the moment you share something with them, it's already old because your world could have updated.
Right.
But imagine they're only updating that once a day, right? And mm-hmm. So you're reliant on them to be the sole source of truth. In this world, you're a shared source of truth. And so each of those parties are an identity in that network. And so, for example, a custodian like Citi become... That's their identity. Now, Citi will, the moment an investor moves something through that network, if permission, Citi will be notified instantaneous that that has occurred. And then they can actually then self-execute. And basically across the network, we can allow pre-programmed business logic to self-execute without any human interaction. So a big principle of Grow is what's called removing muda. And muda is waste in Japanese. And it is the most beautiful thing when you look at financial services because there is just endless muda.
And waste.
Yeah, there is just waste everywhere. And if you go, well, I care because when we started this business, we were trying to build something that you would want as an investor yourself There's no value in that waste.
All right, but that's all sort of behind the scenes. How would it that so it, okay, well, let's stick with that. How does that actually benefit the super fund?
So the cost that they're removing is enormous. So if you think every day,
because it's real time, or because you're removing a lot of the waste,
don't need humans to reconcile things.
So
every
you're
day.
Taking away jobs?
No, we're actually moving people. Imagine you are a high performer, which you look at your career. I think you've been pretty determined in what you've done. But imagine if each day, 5 hours of your 7 hours of your day was just manually repeating the same task that you did yesterday. That's not pretty. That's not very invigorating. So we're seeing people who are deeply passionate being able to move from those jobs into jobs that they've actually never been able to do before. For example, you're starting to see funds now have the ability to build real-time investment solutions that anticipate what an investor actually wants. You're actually seeing digital experiences be able to be created where you get a different digital experience to someone else based on the data that we have on you. And that could be data that's also shared beyond just your super fund world. So what it's actually enabling is experiences on the front end that have never been able to be created for. But it's also actually allowing then, if you could imagine you're the CEO or COO of a super fund and you're looking at your machine. And when you think of a machine, think of it like you go to a manufacturing plant and you're on level 5 and you're looking down on it. You can see everything that's going through that machine. Now, you're the CEO, COO, CFO. You can now see all the pieces in your machine, what you're paying for them, which data is moving where, and what that can look like in the future. And it starts to then get you to a world from a traditional finance to a digital economy to then you can get to things like tokenizing assets and what that can mean. And you can do it all in the way of giving actual value back to the end investor rather than at the moment, unfortunately, there are so many providers in the ecosystem from a consumer to the stock exchange each day who are reconciling processes and they're charging you money for it.
Yeah. Did you pioneer the use of blockchain for super funds?
I think that we are one of the few companies in the world who looked at a problem, identified through the identification of that problem, then selected a technology that could solve that problem. And we actually looked at all different technologies other than blockchain. We settled with blockchain. It then needed to be a permission-based blockchain because it's financial services. You can't just share that with anybody across the network. And that is how we led to what we have. The fortunate thing is that, yes, we are certainly considered a global leader in this space and it's been very well received. It's great when you get into production where you can see the actual benefits of it. It's not something you talk about at a barbecue. People don't get excited. If you work in the industry and it's saving millions of dollars, it's a pretty it's a great feeling to know you're having that impact. The other thing that we're doing for them that is so vitally important is that because we can share the data in the way we can see call center agents. So you call the call center. The call center can now see your end screen. They can see exactly what you are looking at. They can say, look, I can see your problem. So imagine calling someone, they can actually see the screen you're using because the data is so rich. They can help you resolve that in a first call. And you can say, thank you very much. I can now move on. We've all been on the thing where they say, I'm really sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah.
I'll have to go away.
Yeah.
And so the benefit of this is that it's actually then all the way across their value chain, we're starting to remove that waste, not just around the cost, but you're actually then starting to, if people have an insurance claim and there's an accident and you can start to see the workflow of where that's up to. Whereas in the current world, that is a complete black box and you have no idea where anything is up to.
Yeah. Can we just go back to Grow Super? Mm-hmm. And I know that didn't last that long.
Yes.
But was that your first startup and how difficult was that to actually get it moving and scale it up even to the degree you did?
Yes.
And what did you scale it up to? What did it become?
Yeah, so it wasn't my first business. I'd built a business before that.
Your financial advice business,
But this was a very different business to that business. This business, that business, the first one was cash flow positive, pretty much instantaneous.
And from day one. Because it's really your skills and,
that's right.
and maybe even a home office.
That's right. So that was coming into this business was different. I'd never raised capital before. We had to figure out how to raise capital. Scaling into that was very different where you were signing long-dated contracts with partners to do things. You were making promises and bets about where you could get to. You were building a team with capital that had been provided. You had to think about that capital in the sense of that it was fuel to get you to a certain destination and a checkpoint. And at that checkpoint, you would be judged on did you actually achieve what you said you would achieve.
Yeah. The product that then became Grow Inc.
Yes.
When did Grow Inc. come into being?
Grow Inc., we became more than a super fund or more than just focus on super in 2020.
Yeah. But back when sort of Grow Super was starting, that was sort of 2016, 2017. How did you actually get it to market and how difficult was that?
It was one of the most enjoyable things we've ever done. I admire when people are starting out. We spent a lot of time planning how we would come to market. And
did you have a business plan? Do you believe in those sorts of things?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm very, I'm quite meticulous in how I think about those things and where you're trying to get to and what is your plan, and then work backwards for them, the end goal, and write down all the steps that you want to get to there. Be stubborn on your vision and flexible in how you get there is something we talk a lot about. But as we came to market, we realized that no one knows who we are. We were a group of entrepreneurs in Surry Hills in a two-bedroom unit above a French bakery, and there was plenty of other businesses attacking this space with a lot more capital than us. And we decided, we knew the Batuta Advocate guys pretty well. I'm sure you know who they are.
Yeah.
And they'd never done a video before. And we partnered with them. They'd never flown out to Batuta. We paid for them to fly to Batuta. They did a video. It won ad of the month overnight, Google, everybody. It was an instantaneous hit of how we brought our brand to the market. But it also actually, behind it was a very serious tone that that resonated well. And I think that that's what we did, was that we respected that the market we play in is very important. You are dealing with people's, ultimately, their retirement savings.
Yeah.
And you are the custodian of how you work through that.
Yeah.
And you should take that job as a great privilege.
So you had a couple of other founders?
Yes.
With you?
Yes.
You weren't qualified, university trained in computer science or digital technology. You had some qualification for financial advice?
I certainly would say that I hope I was pretty qualified in that space.
Okay,
I understood the financial sector. I understood the finance side of it.
Yeah.
Quite well, yes.
So what was your input into that sort of first I suppose business iteration, and what did the others bring?
Oh, I think I was very lucky. We had a group of passionate people. My input was... Yeah, they were friends who I'd met through sport ultimately, and then the other two were connected through that, and that's right. How we got together. It led us on a path where we certainly had a shared vision about where we wanted to get to. I learned a lot from that group, because it was a group who understood a bit about capital raising that I didn't have an understanding of, through to understanding how to build and scale teams, through to then being so fastidious about the design and the brand that you own and how that is a representation.
About the digital side, the technology side?
Yeah, and then the technology side as well. So we were quite a diverse team, and it's amazing as you go through that how you – If you're actually quite vulnerable in what you don't know, what you can learn, and then through that vulnerability willingness to learn what you can then produce. And I'm very grateful for the team we had at the start. The biggest challenge you can ever have, Bud, is that if you stand still, you won't exist. And so you must keep evolving yourself. And what made you a founder does not give you the right to be the CEO. And that's what I sit down now and say all the time, is that that's great that you helped founded the company, but does that give you the right to be here? And you must apply for your job and move into that way.
And do you set that standard for yourself too?
I do, yeah. So I sit with my chairman still now, and he's been fantastic, where he's had some pretty direct conversations with me over time, where he said, look, if you keep the way you are, then you're probably not the right person. But the good thing is, I do think you've got it into you to be the next CEO.
And what was it that he was worried about?
Oh, I think it's just that you need to scale into the company that you want to be, and you are a leader who, as you go through that, you might have been very deeply focused into the product. You've shifted from the product into working in the sales team. You've then got to scale those teams. You've then realised
employ people, the right people.
You've got to learn how to put governance across your business. You end up with investors. You end up with then thinking about outcomes, and you do get judged on that. And the expectations of you, I think people, I used to always think that, you know, when we get there, things will be good. And you realize that it's the journey to getting there that is actually the best part. And once you get there, I think humans, we're proof of this as a species. We're so divinely dissatisfied when we get to a location that we always want more. Look how we've evolved. And I think that that's what I love about the journey of Grow, is that, Our our opportunity is limitless. And through sound execution, I think we could be one of Australia's greatest technology companies, but we must execute on that. And if I want to be part of that journey, I've got to keep evolving myself.
Yeah. How did you get the funding? Did you need much funding in the beginning? And was it always through investors or was it credit cards, savings, banks?
At the very early days, we were fortunate. Some of the we all put our own time in. Some of my business partners actually were able to lend us engineers and designers they had in their teams, which, you know, it was they're the key ingredients when you start early. As we went through that journey, we've done a number of funding rounds. The people who bought into the original business, it's been great to see them, some of them exit, but also a number of them stay and they're part of where we are now.
Like who?
You've seen, you know, you look at our register now, since we've shifted the company, you've seen companies like Citibank, Airtree.
Yeah. So Airtree Ventures was in fairly early.
They came in 2021.
Oh, okay.
The Australian Stock Exchange came in as well.
Yeah, which is great to have actually a listed company in the ASX.
Yeah, we've been really lucky. I think that if I tried to replay what we have done, I couldn't imagine a world where we could get the type of investors that we have, and they share our vision. And I think to understand a business like Grow, you must, if you actually have firsthand experience in that space, it's amazing. But when you couple that with some venture capital backed businesses as well, and no one has total control over the business, it's amazing how you create that tension around what we're building versus the vision and how you can actually have the practical application of that. But yeah. You're very fortunate there.
You've snared some pretty impressive customers too. Tell us a bit about the Vanguard Super deal.
Yeah, the Vanguard Super deal was company transformative.
How did it come about?
Well, it actually came about very early in 2019. We were looking around Grow Super, the fund, and
so this is the massive global asset manager, Vanguard.
Yeah, nearly $9-10 trillion. And so, there's certainly for me, if you go back to my finance days, I just truly admired what they have built as a business, and we had very many shared beliefs. But at this stage, we were a company of about 36 people. I went and saw Vanguard and had actually been telling them that, look, I think you should get into superannuation. And at that stage, it just shows here how good they are at what they do, is that they said they would not get into superannuation.
They had funds, but they weren't super funds.
And we left that conversation. I said, well, you should take our fund. And then 3 months later, they called and said, look, I couldn't tell you in the meeting, but we're going to enter the super space and we understand that you're building infrastructure to solve that. We'd like to put you in the tender. We were the only company worth less than a couple of $1 billion around the globe who participated in that. Some of the biggest companies in finance, you could imagine, were in this
tender.
You
were worth a lot less than a couple of billion, weren't you?
I think we were worth about $30 million at that stage. So it was...
Which is still impressive, but not compared to some of these big players that Vanguard would have been playing with.
And what they did to our business was so amazing. And I think that There's people who work at that company who I will always be thankful for what they did. That doesn't mean it was easy.
No. What did they do for your business?
Well, what they did for our business is that imagine working with someone who has incredibly high standards and they won't budge on those high standards. And although that can feel really tough at the time, if you both are shared on the mission that you're trying to get to, and so you've got a shared view of that, they helped us mature in ways that would probably take 10 to 15 years at another company. And yet
they trusted you to be their sort of platform infrastructure partner, even though they obviously knew you weren't that well developed.
Yeah, it was, I would say at that point in time, a very brave decision by some people. And it just shows you that I really admire organizations who've been around a long time, who know if they want to make a genuine impact to the world, that there are some times you need to be bold in how you do that. Now, they didn't make that decision on a whim. They spent well over 27 days, I still remember, in our office doing due diligence, going through all that process. They taught us about project management and the importance of governance that sits across that. And you think scaling into a business and then all of a sudden you're turning up to committees where they have to report back to the way they run their organization. rolling through all of that, the way they think about testing their application, the brand is so important to them, and before we could release anything, how that is approved. And I'll go back to it, just the standards they put us through, put us in, you know, and then the validation of when they went live, the straight through processing, the way they are running compared to many other incumbents out there, even though they're a very new fund, just actually demonstrated what is possible. And the beautiful thing is, it's a little bit like the Apple iPhone, the first one. What they released on day one will be very different to where they get to in the future. And it's all made possible because of the infrastructure or the operating system, which sits inside your phone, like us, or like AWS, versus being on-premise, versus being on AWS, what becomes possible from there.
Yeah. Roughly how much in dollar terms was that business worth to you?
Oh, it's certainly, I know everyone wants to know that. I think that the part that's so important to grow is that confidentiality, and to give you a little flavor for that, is that we signed an agreement with Vanguard in September 2020, and we got all the way through. We hadn't signed then the master services agreement, which is the final contract, until March 2021. And during that time, no one knew that Grow was the provider of choice, and we were already working with them. And in March, there was an article released that another provider was about to win that contract. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I've betted, you know, we've bet the whole company on this. We have gone out and raised capital.
We're certain that we've got it.
We've got this. And we obviously did have it, and we signed that. And it just was a real demonstration that they asked us, confidentiality was really important. And it's been no different since then. So we then signed, you know, we had Mercy Super as another customer, Australian Ethical is another one, and recently Hester, who, you know, has over a million members, and is probably one of the most prestige super funds in the country, certainly, and run exceptionally well. It's a part that they ask us to respect, and and that's not easy when you're building and scaling a business, because often that is a part that you need to be selling to people. But it's not that's, you know, we can drive change through them, and it's not something we share.
Before we talk about funding rounds and things like that, your childhood, I mean, you said you grew up on a farm in central or western New South Wales. It's still a big leap, isn't it, to go into the fintech business?
Yeah, it's a fifth generation farm, and my brother still runs it, and a little town called Lake Ajeligo. And it was, I think, the best upbringing I could ever imagine. It was different. I think I always wanted to be a footballer and a farmer, and the second part didn't work out, and I was probably a little bit lost for a while, but I think the best thing that ever happened to me, I was playing and coaching football in America. I was working for a guy who there, an Australian guy who was very successful, and he took me for lunch one day, and I was 26, and he said, look, imagine you're in your 70s. He was in his 70s, and you're reading a book. It's a good book. You're up to chapter 4, and in that chapter, you realise that the book's about you, about a 26-year-old guy, and he described a bunch of stuff I'd done. He said, would you keep reading the book, or would you put it down? And I sort of sat there in silence, and I said, I don't really understand. Like, I get it, but what is the point? He always had these ways of delivering me with metaphors or some message, and I said, what's the story? He said, look, I think you've got something very special that you could do, but right now you need to go home, you need to craft who you want to be, and off the back of that, you need to decide which path you want to go down. I'll happily support you on that, but right now you essentially need to grow up, because you've got a great potential, but if you don't, your book's going to be pretty boring. And I think I've carried that all the way through in business and life, is that you have chapters, and they're great chapters, and then you close that chapter and move on to the next one. And that's how I look at Grow. We've just had some amazing chapters. Without them, we wouldn't be the company we are today, but I don't want to stop where we are. We've got plenty more to write.
Clearly your family wasn't into finance or digital or the internet.
Definitely not.
Yes. You said your dad was a farmer.
Yeah.
When you started Grow Super and then Grow Inc., When did you start making real revenue and real profitability? How long did that take?
So we were we saw money roll in from day one, which was amazing, of going live.
So you needed funding to set up.
Funding to.
But then yeah. funds from individuals.
Individuals,
or,
yeah. So we saw a group of individuals sign up and that started to deliver money. As you looked at that, we could have kept scaling into that. The real money was about then selling a SaaS solution to funds, and the benefits of a SaaS solution is that as you build that, the cost to build it might be a substantial amount, but the cost to sell additional units of it reduces over time.
Exactly.
And for us, that was a big part of the strategy. But as I mentioned in part one, is that we the challenges we faced led to that being, I think when we sat down, it wasn't going to be a commercial business. Unfortunately, due to an error that we made, which was just how archaic the back end was.
This is Grow Super.
Yeah. And I think when you can be 6 months into something, you can respect that you've asked for capital from people, you've looked at that and gone, we got a key piece of our assumptions wrong. What can we do? And that led us to being bold and saying, well, we think that it's uncovered a problem that's far bigger. It's a global problem, not just an Australian problem. And it was really pleasing that investors decided to back us on that.
But you backed yourselves to think we can come up with the solution.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Well,
and were you all as gung-ho, or were you the most gung-ho?
No, I think we were. I think the best part was that we just love solving problems, and I think that's the group who were there at the start, and as we've built the company out, that was what we were really good at. Was that, yeah. And it was never someone else's problem. It was our problem. And at the end of it, you would get to it. And it was never that I came up with that solution, like we came up with that solution. But we used to spend a lot of time on, is that the problem? Yeah. Have we got this problem right? And I think that was then led us to this. And so, for example, when we thought, look, this is a problem, this could be big, we sat there and said, well, it's a bit rich of a few entrepreneurs in Surry Hills to say that they could solve one of the biggest global problem in financial services. Like there is, without a doubt, this is one of the biggest pain points globally for financial services.
This overlapping, non-communicative.
Think of it as reconciliation.
Yeah.
All the things that happen in the back office. And it would be a bit bold to come out and say, just want to let everyone know that we've nailed it and we've got this. So we actually then said, well, we know we want to build a solution that would solve our problems as a fund, but before we rush off, shouldn't we go out and ask the big funds, did they have the same problems? But for Grow to go in and do that, we actually then partnered with a top four consultant. They ran the program. We understood all of their pain points. The benefit of that was that as we were building the solution, we got to see also that they had built idiosyncratic processes and business rules out there. So we were like, well, you can't just build it for one solution. Yeah. You have to think about how this could be accommodate all of the different business processes and rules that sit out there and how they've set up their legacy. And the benefit of coming through that, we also learned that what are their pain points? And if you can actually be empathetic with your customer and you can sit there and put yourself in their shoes, it's pretty amazing what you can come up with. But if you're not willing to sit there and say that, and if you just think that you know the answers to every solution.
And impose your solution on them when it's not going to work,
It's not going to work. And the best part was that people started to believe that, could they do this? They then gave us a chance. Okay. And went on that journey. We then, like every time you think of a big enterprise play that comes in, there needs to be a CEO. There's different CEOs. There's CEOs who say, that'll never work. There are CEOs who say, if it works, I think this could transform, but I'm not putting my business on there first.
Yeah.
And then there are CEOs who say that could change and I'm willing to not risk my business, but I think I can build a structured way to do that. And we were really lucky. We met a super fund called Mercy Super. They were from the original days of the Sisters of Mercy. Mm-hmm. So all the nurses, and they were based out of Brisbane. And and their CEO and fund thought, well, back in the 50s, it's a beautiful story. They The nuns looked at nurses and said that they don't have retirement savings. They were one of the pioneers of what that could look like. And I know people go back to the wartime and there was pensions then, but the Sisters of Mercy did a pretty amazing concept. And when they looked at us, they thought maybe this is the next wave of what it could look like. And without them backing us and becoming the first fund to go on this, and remember, if you're the CEO of that fund or you're the board, no one globally had brought blockchain to life on production. And we went through that. And
wow. So the nuns accepted your blockchain technology.
Well, I think to be fair, it's a board and a community that sits there. But the Sisters of Mercy or Mercy Super, it was, and especially that group and that CEO, she gave me some amazing lessons along the way. And that doesn't mean it was all rosy conversations, but we had a deep sense of pride that they had backed us to deliver on our vision, and we owed it to them to deliver that outcome. And when we brought that to life, it was great to see that what it had done, and also then it allowed us to demonstrate that the problems that Mercy Super had were the same problems that other funds would have, just a bigger scale. And then Vanguard then took us on a journey to deliver to a Vanguard expectations.
Right. So is it the case that you solved these problems for Mercy Super? You successfully, helped their 13,000 members? So you're saying then Vanguard saw what you did there and thought, well, even though 13,000 members is tiny, tiny compared to Vanguard, but then Hester Super took over Mercy Super. And what happened then?
Yeah, that was, imagine getting... You've worked with Mercy Super, the two CEOs, and I commend them both, of Mercy Super and Hester, made a decision for, they were so aligned as funds.
Deb Blakely.
Yes. And
Hester.
Wendy Tancred at Mercy Super were just, obviously Hester is the number one in the healthcare world, and you've got Mercy Super who, Mater Hospitals and whatnot sit behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And they merged. And as part of that, we were given a trial, was essentially what that was. And what that meant was that we still managed Mercy Super, but Hester as a fund were able to see what was it like in production with Grow. And they, as the people who operate that fund of over a million members, could see that whilst they were still running their own business. And after that occurred last September, and after that had run through its own due diligence, it led us to winning the broader business. And that's going to be a big transformational piece of change that we do. And we think
you're still about to do that.
Yeah, they take a long time to do those
and they
migrations.
Have how many members?
Just over a million members is where they are. It's pretty just when you stop and think about that, and we talk about this a lot at Grow, is like, how many lives are we impacting? That's basically a key metric that we run. And if you imagine that you're an engineer, you're a business analyst, you're working our administration team, you're a project manager, the decisions you're making, there's going to be over a million people across the country who are using technology that you have built and implemented. That's a huge responsibility, but it's also something that you should be very proud of. And that's why we say that, you know, we're in the business of we think that we can change the whole financial infrastructure. No one knows we exist. And you can partner with like-minded institutions like Mercy Super, Australian Ethical, Hester, Vanguard, and they can then spread this across their world, and I think through sound execution, we'll win more business.
Yeah. Was there one decision or one move that really catapulted Grow as you were growing Grow?
No, I wouldn't say there was one decision, but I would say that the decision to obviously exit Grow Super and go and become Grow Inc. was very that was, you know, probably the decision to make that moved it to where we are. But I think the reality is that you have to make incremental steps each day, and you realize that it's never one thing that adds up to where you are, but they do compound over time. And if you think about it as a flywheel for us, is that if we're in the business of giving the best customer experience our funds have ever received, they'll give us more opportunities. And through those opportunities, they'll say, can you solve these problems? And that'll let us build more solutions. And we don't have to build the solution. We can let other people build applications to solve those problems. So you're actually opening up what's called TAM, or total addressable market, to people out there that have never been able to attack this space because the incumbents operate in a closed model where they cross-subsidize between call center, CRM, they sell their own brand of those.
Right.
Whereas we've commoditized that whole arena. And if you actually build more solutions, you'll give a better customer experience. But as you get scale, you'll actually get enhanced efficiency. So we'll be able to provide those cost efficiencies back. And then through that enhanced efficiency, we'll get better delivery. And as we get better delivery, a subset of that is you get a better customer experience.
Yeah.
And as that, if you think of that spinning down a hill, it just gains momentum. But it does mean we must keep executing well. We must be stubborn on our vision, flexible in how we get there, be empathetic for our clients. And through that, I think we could, go on and be one of Australia's best companies. Or if we don't, then, you know, that's going to be our own fault for doing it, because the opportunity is in front of us.
The fundraising journey, you've had a number of fundraisers. You've had six funding rounds, I think, basically, since 2017, but your sixth raising in June of 21, that raised $25 million, which I think the Financial Review reported that valued the company at over $100 million. Now, that's, you know, June 2021, so you've moved on from there.
Yeah, it's been a... it's not so much about the value. I think it's how well you spend that money and what it does. I think that when I look at it, I think this company could be around for a lot longer than my lifetime. We've just done another. This is just sort of shows the DNA of the company. I talked earlier about not sharing contracts and not disclosing when they're signed. And we live in a confidential world, and funds can trust us in that way. And I'm very proud of that. I think that's what I want to maintain. It's also about not tooting your own horn. We did a $50 million funding round in March this year. It's been the hardest economic conditions running. Most people would have ran to the AFR to tell everybody about that story. For Grow, it's back to business. We didn't tell anyone we did it. It was a significant up round. It would have been one of the only stories about that. But that's just not who we are. We don't need to do that. And
extraordinary. What are you going to do with that money? How's that going to be spent?
Our job with that money is... we are now on a path to profitability, and it's now about executing that really, really well.
Yeah.
The next lot of, if we were to take more capital, you end up in a growth capital space, and it's interesting the type of investors that can help us get to that. But it comes back to, once again, delivering, and if you exceed expectations on delivery, we'll win more business, more people will want to invest in us. But where we're spending the money is we're really attacking into the superannuation and then ultimately the managed fund space at the moment. And
Are you able to keep controlling? Are you a controlling shareholder or a major individual shareholder?
Certainly a major shareholder. And I find the controlling thing, I talk to a lot of founders about this, and especially when you mentor some people coming through the journey. I think it's a lovely thing about a lot of founders is you just want to help people not make the same mistakes you made. But I think people get a bit obsessed that they own 90% or 80%, but it's 80% of what? Whereas for me also, and I think when people think of control, I said it earlier, if you're not the right person for the job, then you should get out of the road. And for me, that's my view, is that I think I am the right CEO for this company for where we are now. I know to get it to where we want to be, I'm going to have to evolve. And I've gone through multiple coaches to help me get to that different place. And I think that if I can do that every year, I ask then the same of my senior leadership team, and I ask that of everybody else. And it's just been beautiful to watch some people come into our company. It's probably the thing that I get the most satisfaction from anything, is that you watch them evolve who they are as a person and what they've been able to achieve. And that's my rule. Every interview, I still try and interview most people who come into the company.
Really? How many employees now?
About 150. So I still meet everybody regardless if I'm not in the interview process. I ask, there's two things, that the two rules that we agree to is that When you come to grow, you're putting on the grow jersey, so you're taking that jersey off someone else, and your job is to when you hand it over to someone else, it's in a better position than when you picked it up. And in return, so you've made us a better company, we'll make you a better person and more employable. And so far, that's pretty amazing when people can stand up at the end, whether they've been with Grow for 2 years or since the start, and when they leave, they can say, you know, I made Grow a better place. That's a pretty special thing. Mm. And we do that when we launch, if we launch a fund into the market, you can never take that away that group of people did that. And so we have certain memorabilia that we give to people because it's a little bit like a time capsule that no matter what happens in your life, you were part of that team that achieved a mission that nobody else was part of and can take that away from you. And that's pretty special because some of these things are really hard that we do, and you have to be a high-performing team to execute well on it.
You're obviously a very passionate person, a very passionate leader. Stepping back maybe just from your business, any reflections on really what's important for founders to keep in mind?
Very good question.
Well, let me throw a starter at you. Would you not drink too much of the Kool-Aid?
Yes, I'm not one who has ever been to founder startup meetings and whatnot, or go and hang out with other startups. I just think that it really disturbs me that people think it's cool to have a startup and burn money. A fish and chip shop, someone once said to me, is a startup for a day, and if it's run by whoever it's run by, they then have to make money. A charity is a startup, but after that, they must know how they're going to continue to offer those services that they offer. And so for me is that I take that part very seriously, that you are building a great business that can also go beyond you. So I think the part of that when I look at it is that don't drink too much of the Kool-Aid, but we all say it to each other is, when you do have the wins, stop and actually enjoy them. Because I still remember doing the first funding round and looking at our bank account and seeing a chunk of money sitting in that bank account.
$1 million, was it, your first round?
Yeah, it's about $1.5 million was sitting there. And when you see that sitting in your bank account, it was just a feeling that I've never been able to recoup. You roll through to a $50 million round, it's a great feeling, but you need to be able to stop, and you need to be able to thank your team and for all of that, because on the other side of that are some really hard moments. But I wouldn't trade a thing. I'm enjoying it more now than I ever have, and I'm very lucky, and I think I've been able to do that. The other bit of advice that I tell people a lot is that don't ever say that you're not the person to lead the company in the future, or you're not the person if it's going to list in the future or do these certain things. You can't predict what you will feel like, where your energy will be. But the moment you start saying to a venture capitalist that you're not the person for something where they're putting money in to get you to, they will make that decision for you.
Mm. A couple of quick questions that I'm asking my guests, and it doesn't have to be a long answer. What are you obsessed about at the moment?
At work, or
be it a book, a film, a meal, a holiday, an idea, a cause?
I'm pretty obsessed about, I have a 2-year-old son, and what I'm obsessed about is just watching how you interact and how you can be engaged with an individual who's only 2 and the impact that can have on their day, and then how you can think about, you know, how are you present during that, and what impact does that then have on their language and how you behave, how that role models through. And I guess I get the benefit at work where I can see a lot of inner child come out. So what that means is that when the pressure comes on, we live in a pressure-based world, you actually get to see people's inner child, and they will revert back to things that were their inner child behaviors. And so, for example, under pressure, they might throw their toys out. They might say, whoa, I don't have all the information. They might say that I'm not good at numbers, so you can't ask me to do this stuff. And you realize that, unfortunately, that inner child could have been pushed on you at a very early age and that closed mindset. And so I'm really enjoying at the moment trying to, I'm very obsessed around how you can, with an open mindset, what you can do for someone. And I think I was very lucky that I had parents and mentors who it wasn't like they said you can do anything, but they did say if you're passionate about something and with passion and grit, don't ever be, you'll be very surprised what you can achieve. And so that's probably what I'm obsessed about at the moment.
What's the toughest thing you've faced in your business journey?
I think the toughest thing I've ever faced is certainly along the journey we lost some of my business partners, and that was just incredibly tough to go through.
You parted company.
Yeah. We you know, you have gone from working with each other daily. You'd be sending messages to each other 24/7. You've built this thing together, and you've parted ways. And that was a really hard part of the journey. I think fast that into, you know, we have, you know, at the early stages, there was many times where we nearly ran out of money. And, you know, there's times where I've had to say to our staff, look, if we don't get to this point, you know, we don't have those issues anymore, but every founder usually goes through them in the early stages. But it's quite amazing how people respect you if you say, look, I have enough money to make sure we get to here in the early stage. You have my word that I've put away anything, entitlements that you deserve. If you do get another job offer, please let me know, because there might be things I'm working on in the background. And so I might be able to tell you that it's okay, we are staying here. And there's some people who I just love. They're still at the company now who I've had that conversation with. They're doing a role now that 4 years ago, there's no way they could have done that role. They are probably going to wake up in a few years' time and be regarded as some of the best product or engineering people in this country. And they've done that through their own hard work.
What do you say to other probably young people who have an idea and want to do it and do a startup?
Well, I have a bit of a rule. It's okay to talk about it once, and I'll be very supportive of that. If you tell me that you're still working on it the second time, I'm like, okay, well, I'd love to see it. But if you're talking about it the third time and you don't do anything, you're obviously not having a bias to action. So
you're tough about that. Well, don't keep talking about it.
Yeah,
do it.
It's just people, what fascinates me is people think of this big mythological thing about entrepreneurship and what drives it. And people go, I'm not inspired. And everyone looks for inspiration to get motivation and then to take action. And I never understand that. Take action. With action, you will be surprised what momentum you get, which will give you motivation. And through motivation, you will become inspired to do things that weren't possible. And so that is what my biggest thing is take action. If you are moving forward, you'll be surprised how fast that wheel starts to spin.
Matt Keeley, the co-founder of Grow Inc. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on Build It, They'll Come.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Ta.
I hope you enjoyed Build It, They'll Come. Let me know via Twitter and LinkedIn. Better still, let your family, friends and colleagues know by sharing it around your networks. And I'd love you to give it a star rating on Apple Podcasts to make it easier for others to find us. Be sure to subscribe, as there are plenty of upcoming episodes you don't want to miss, with more amazing innovators and entrepreneurs on how they turn their light bulb idea into an empire.